Thank you. Well, this is our last evening of the season. And a group of people from the Sangha are sitting somewhere else tonight at Joa's first retreat. Maybe they're sitting right now. Maybe they're still getting things ready. I don't know, because they just started today. Let's see. So it's an ending of the season for us, and it's a beginning of something for Joa. It's an interesting coincidence. It also happens to be the day that 29 years ago today, I met my teacher. I had spoken with her on the telephone, but I actually went and saw her for the first time on this day, July 7th. Certainly changed my life. Probably changed hers, changed all of us. So we're on the screen because we wouldn't be sitting here if that not happened. And so I always think of her on this day. Sometimes I give her a gift. At the moment, she is in Normandy at one, a member of the Sangha's house, who is a very old woman, someone who I did Chukai with. Some of you know her, Renata. And they have COVID, both of them. Which is, you know, neither one of them is young. And Renata is, I think, 96. But apparently they had a doctor come and it's okay. They're vaccinated and this is the Omicron variant. So. But in any case, so I did not give her a gift today. I guess the gift that, if I look at it from her perspective, I think the gift that I give her is by doing what I do. From my perspective, it's a little different, but I can understand how, from the teacher's perspective, that's what the gift is. I saw a quote from Confucius the other day that said, what greater joy can there be than putting into practice what you have learned? And I agree, you know. Putting into practice what I learned from my teacher, which, you know, it's always funny to say learned from, but I guess it's learned with. We don't really learn anything from, but with. Although we learn by imitation and learn by example. I know in my Qigong practice, I learn by imitating what the teacher is doing. Also, he's explaining and saying, this is this, and this is what you do here, and all this stuff, but it's really powerful to watch him. And I feel the same way about my teacher. And the example she gave and continues to give is priceless, really priceless. And I asked her recently if she was thinking of retiring. She will be 80 next month. And many other teachers her age, kind of her peers, at least 1, 2, 3 that I know of in the United States or for peers have retired, meaning they arranged to turn over the direction of their center to one of their successors, or they closed down their Zen center and continuing with a few students, but not full-time teaching like she is. And I asked her that, and it was categoric no. No. No desire to stop. No desire. Too much to do and too much love for it. And she can't imagine her life without it. And as long as she's healthy enough to do it, she said she would keep doing it. And that's inspiring too, I feel. Because in a sense, how could she retire, really? How can you retire from your life? I mean, you retire when you die, I guess, but I understand why the other teachers are doing what they were doing, what they're doing as well. But at the same time, I understand Roshi. I love that Confucius quote about what greater joy can there be than putting into practice what you have learned? And putting this into practice means sharing it with others. So what greater joy could there be? And I think we could apply that to any disciplines, anything we learn. We learn to play an instrument and then we love to play it. We learn to play tennis and we play it, or we learn to dance and dance. And I guess part of the joy is because it moves from concept to experience. Until we put it into practice, it's not complete. It's not fully alive yet. And we're lucky because our practice, we put our practice in practice while we're practicing. We practice sitting. And while we're practicing sitting, we're sitting. And then we stand up and we practice walking And we practice going out into the world by going out into the world. So we're lucky in that sense that our practice is like that. So this is our final evening until September, I forget the day. September 12th or something like that. So maybe are there any questions or anything, any subjects, any comments that anyone would like to introduce that you want to talk about? How does it feel to be saying, okay, we won't be doing this again for 2 months? I don't know. Krisha.
Good evening, everyone. Roshi, I think you and also Geno Roshi had told me, especially you, more than once, trust. And I was thinking, what do they mean about this? Is it trust others? Trust in myself? What is trust in myself? Trust what we call the sixth sense, something like you have some wisdom, but you don't listen to it. That's my definition of sixth sense. It's not something esoteric. And I was wondering, and I, if possible, I would like you to say something about trust.
It's true that we do say that a lot. Probably we say that a lot because that is the fundamental teaching in a sense. What I mean by that is that it's a way of pointing us towards our own heart. You know, I think it's Thich Nhat Hanh who said, happiness lies in your own heart. And liberation lies in your own heart. The truth lies in your own heart. There's no one, you can't, no one else has the secret. And there is no secret, in fact. But if there is a secret, it's in your heart. So you hear all of this stuff, and I guess we say trust. Trust, just trust your own, you know, if you want to call it sixth sense, intuition, wisdom. The more that we do this practice, the more that we practice with koans, because koans are very great practice for this, the more we become attentive to and aware of this truth that is me. And we know, we come to know when something is right or not. Right in the sense of appropriate. In order to come to that place, that we have to trust that we will find it, that we will realize it, that we will awaken, that this is the path for me. Or that we will pursue this path and we will find out that it's not the path for me, but we trust that we will realize that. And I say that from experience, from having my experience that for myself, but also experienced that, seen so many people experience it, of trusting and gaining strength through that trust and coming to a place of peace through that trust and happiness. And of course it's impermanent. So, but can we trust too that because it's impermanent, whatever it is won't last? Or like the Dalai Lama says, it was the Dalai Lama's birthday yesterday, by the way. He says something to the effect of the important, when we're faced with what we think of as a problem, the important thing is to look at what we can do to resolve that problem. So if, you know, we have a headache, we look at, well, what's the cause of our headache, and what we can take a paracetamol or aspirin or something to relieve it. Or maybe we need to drink more water or something. But if we only focus on the problem, if we just focus on, I have a headache, I have a headache, I have a headache, without looking about the causes and how to relieve it, we have very little chance of relieving it. And it doesn't really serve any purpose to just focus on the problem. And trust is kind of like that. Trust is trust that we will find a way. You know, trust that you will find a way to live. Not by focusing on what you think is wrong with your life or your unhappiness, but looking into what is the root of that unhappiness and seeing how you can ease that to them and trust that you will find the way. Well, that's one of the things Roshi always was teaching was, you know, trust that you will find a way to live. When, you know, I have two kids and I have a job and a partner and I'm living in the Zen Center and, you know, chaos. It's always trust that you will find a way to live. Trust. And she was right. She was right. But I had to let go of ideas about opinions, about my attachment to my poor little self who had such a hard time compared to the other people living there. Or thinking I had such a great position. I had the perfect practice. I'd let go of that too. And just trust.
It makes me think of some of you who were at the Belgium retreat. There was this young man, I don't know if you remember, who at some point had so many questions about the practice, about why he didn't feel anything. He didn't feel the effect right now, and he was wondering if it was the right practice. It was Zen, and the difference between Zen and other meditation practices, and full of questions. And I remember talking to him afterwards at the end of the retreat, and I ended up saying the same thing: trust, just do it and trust it, trust the way. And now when I hear and I said ooh la la, it's just it's funny just that we pick up the words or the sayings but yeah, it's just, and it's not just picking it up, it's also somehow trust, it's also trusting that you're on the I was going to say, it's a caring practice also. So trust it in the sense that it carries you somehow. So.
And when you told him that, was it because... It wasn't just because you had heard other people say it. It was because you.
No, it was just that's the only, at some point it was the only thing I could say, because it's trust your experience, trust what's happening, trust. I couldn't find any other way of telling him, you know, and you can't promise anything. You can't say, oh yeah, you're going to have this great realization or... You know, you're going to become whatever, or your life is going to change. No, I mean, you can't say anything. So. I mean, some great teachers probably can say a lot of things, but I couldn't.
Sounds like a good thing to say. I don't know how he received it, but, you know.
Didn't answer his questions.
Ready?
Some of us start with a lot of questions. And maybe one of those maybe if I don't express them out loud, I definitely have them in my mind. If I start this practice, or what is it going to bring me, or any kind of fantasy we can entertain about the thing is always not what's going to happen. Once you do the thing, you have experience of the thing. So any kind of anticipation, it's like when you're young and you're in the back of the car and your parents say, "We're going to arrive soon. When are we going to arrive? When?" I can really see myself in that that way, and the anticipation is never what you're gonna have. So you just have to eat the cake to know what is the taste of it.
And Rashi were talking about this quote from Confucius, "What a great joy to put in practice something that we have learned." And as you are speaking, and in the end, before Krisha talk with us, I asked myself, what have I learned, really? What have I learned so important in my life? And there are two or three questions, but mainly my answer was, wow, yes, I learned about something about gardens and gardening. Okay. And I'm putting it in practice. And it's a great joy, but sorry, I have to do something because I shut the screen. Okay. And it's with great joy to put it in practice. It's true, but it's as if I answer it at the same time this another question emerge, and it was, but the real question for this issue on being gardening and doing things with the garden, with plants, and it's how to put in practice something how to learn to put in practice. How to learn to put in practice this thing that I really enjoy, that is gardening. How to learn to put it in practice, because I remember it was with great joy that I could have time and spend time in the beginning of, 20 years ago, doing these things in this environment that is here. But it was so overwhelming. I remember I was obsessive. And the first 2 years in the summer, with this change of the time, the hour, it was 10:30 night, and I was still in the garden. I didn't think I had to stop. I had to eat nothing. It was still the last minute of daylight. I was in the garden. Every time of my life, it was really obsessive. And it never ended.
And it's really, the question is how to learn to put in practice something I enjoy, I love. And now I am different just because I have not this energy. And most part of the works of heavy things are done. Now it's to maintain and to trust the process. And it's to trust the process. I do what I can do, and I will do it. How? And how will I do it? It's different from the how I did it. And certainly, if I go on with this practice of karma, will be really different in a few years, because I can't have my les genoux et les choses comme ça. It's gone. So it's really a practice how to do it and to put in practice also. And and be here with you. Everything you say, and this too. I said to myself, oh, yes, in this issue of karma, and this too, it's trust. And Lisa said, it's caring. Yes, it's that too. Everything is there. Everything is in the relation, what we think. And, well, it's what I have to say. Yeah, it's how it is. Being in life. Yeah, thank you.
And the garden is always a great metaphor, because I mean, I know that I understand that that's the real practice you're talking about. But as you say, it's trust. You plant the seeds and you trim the branches and you, whatever you do in the garden, and then you trust that something will arise. You don't know what it will be, but you trust. And it flourishes, and some things die, some things do well. You just never know. But we trust. So an interesting notion of, what did you say, Marlon? How do we learn to put into practice what we learned?
How do we learn to put in practice? How to learn to put in practice something we enjoy?
Right. Yeah.
Retro, we enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what we do in this practice too. The garden, our garden is our life. Our life is our garden. So.
I'm not a gardener, but this question of trust is brought up a story which came up last week as well, after we had exchanged some stories about cats and birds and gardens and etc. It was about this little bird I found a year ago. It was in our garden. It was sitting still, and I didn't know what it was, but it didn't fly. It was a young bird. It was you call it a jackdaw in English. I don't know. I found it was it seemed to be a very young bird. It couldn't fly. I thought, this bird has to learn to fly. What do I do? I'm not a bird. And so after maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I checked it again. It was still there, sitting in the corner in the garden. And the little bird was sitting still. It was just sitting. It was not frightened of me, but it was not going away. It just stayed where it was. So in the end, I saw some cats looking at it, and I thought, well, I have to call someone. So I called this service who actually help these animals, can help these animals in trouble. And so they came, and this woman of this service, she went to the bird, and then something strange happened. She took up the bird in her hands, and just at that moment, I think the bird gave a little signal or something. But all around the houses, just I think 20, 30 birds came around. They were very, very noisy at that moment. So she put the bird in the front of the garden and just left it there. And then it became quiet again. So it was an interesting experience, because I learned that I could trust this nature being nature, and just I could let it go without having to help the bird or having some ideas or having to help it or whatever to do. It was an interesting experience.
And do you know what happened to the bird eventually? Did it fly away, or?
No, it did not. And I understood this is normal for this type of bird, not to learn to fly in the first days. So it just had to find a place where to hide. And there was nothing left of any problem. So I think the bird he or she found a place to hide, and that was just it. I think everything was all right.
Yeah. Nice. Trust, yeah. Yes, so much is revealed when we don't intervene. Things as they are, just fine. And in order to not intervene, it takes trust that it's okay, that everything is okay. Ready.
Practice is good too, because I remember when I started to play the guitar with other three, when I started to play jazz with some other folks. At the beginning, I was so shy. We were all so shy. I was playing, putting my head down, don't really looking at the eye of the public. I was shy. And the more we play, the more my head was rising, and I was meeting other people's eyes and sharing the feeling I had. It was not me, it was us. And the pleasure to enjoy music together. It was not, can I play? But we enjoy the music together. So the practice is a good thing too. You don't know until you practice that could happen. At the beginning, you're always shy, and you until you know that you are, it's just all about sharing the love.
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you, Keisha. We don't see you very often. While we've been talking, I was listening very carefully to Roshi to see what you came up with as a synonym of trust. And in fact, I don't think there was one, and I can't think of one, but I think the opposite of an antonym of trust is panic, actually. It's not being able to relax into something that you don't know very well and just say, this is going to come out all right, or it's not, but it will come out somehow. Because if you replace trust with let go, enjoy. Also, I was thinking about this young man you all were talking about. He sounds like he wants to make sure that he's going to get his money's worth. Is that it? I mean, I'm doing all this, and what am I going to get for it?
It's true that, when we are in fear, or you said panic, Debbie, but you know, we could also say fear. And then there's a lot of tension and stress and and it's difficult to trust when we're in that posture, let's say. I think the young man in Belgium, I know that when I was giving the talk and he was asking the questions, I said something like, as I have said before, that the good news and the bad news. The good news being there's nowhere to go, and the bad news being there's nowhere to go. And I elaborated on it, though. And I said, something like that. It's not like there's some spaceship that is going to take you somewhere else. And he was really kind of devastated to hear that, because he said, I've been doing this meditation. He hadn't been practicing for very long, I don't think. I've been doing this because I thought this was the spaceship, that this was the spaceship that was going to free me and, make me feel good and answer all my questions. So I really don't think it was something about getting your money's worth, but it was, he really had questions and was looking for an end to suffering, to summarize it, to find out. I'm not sure how he would formulate it, but to find out who he was, who he truly is, maybe, I don't know. And he had lots of good questions throughout the week. He was always asking good questions. He's the one who asked Roshi, because she was talking about how perception experience alters consciousness, something like that. And for those of you who were there, you might remember. And I don't remember exactly what she was saying, but then he said, how does death affect awareness or consciousness? Awareness, I think it is. And that's when Roshi, fired this, missile that blows everyone's mind. She said, death reveals awareness. Wow. And I don't know what the young man thought about that as an answer, but I know how I felt about it. So, yeah. Questions are always alive. Answers are kind of dead. Although Roshi's answer was not dead. Krisha's raising her hand.
Thank you, Roshi, for giving us another. So do you want to talk a bit about death revealing awareness? I remember that, and I remember, I don't have a clue what they're talking about. And I think I still don't have it. I don't know if it's too abstract. I remember that talk, I remember that guy, I think it was something, yeah. But there's, the trust, and in Buddhism, there's always a lot of talk about death. And we make rituals in our Sangha. To the deceased and the people ill, and it's really important, and I like very much that practice, but I'm not sure if I understand death. And death in that kind of way, I don't think I get what you are trying to say to us. I'm not there, perhaps.
I don't think I'm really trying to say anything with that. I agree. For all of us, death is abstract because none of us have had that experience. And so I totally understand that it's just conceptual kind of what's being said. At the same time, it was in the context of what Roshi had been saying, and I can't remember exactly what the talk was, but this idea that I forget how she phrased it, but that maybe a way of saying it is that we always say, you know, life and death are of supreme importance. That's the great matter of life and death. That's what Zen practice is about. And that's, of course, all of us, that's our big issue, you know, like we were saying recently, you know, death is certain, but the time of death is uncertain for all of us. So it's the great unknown. And yet that's what our practice is all about, is looking into the mystery, the great unknown, going farther and farther into the unknown. And the more we do that, what clouds our awareness is our self, you know, our attachment to self, and this manifestation that we have, that we are so attached to. And I think that death, when this manifestation that we're so attached to is let go of, there's nothing but awareness. Awareness is fully revealed. If we, you know, I have to use some kind of words and explanation, I would say something like that. But that's far from what it is, because it's experiential, like everything. But I sense that that's what it is. The more that I look into it, life and death, the more that I see impermanence, the more I see emptiness, in the sense of experience it, the more I recognize that that's what we're talking about. That it's like something, you know, when you have a fabric and there's the thread that's coming undone, and if you just keep pulling on the thread, pretty soon there's just no fabric. It's not there anymore. And I sense that that's what happens with life and death. But I don't know because I'm alive. I don't know. There was something though else that you said that I was wanted to answer, but I can't remember what it was. What else did you say, Prisha?
I don't know, but I got it. I was thinking about death. Mm-hmm. I was then thinking about impermanence, attachments, death
mm-hmm.
also. But I was thinking of me going under the floor, the earth, and I usually worry about life. It's not usual for me to worry about death as me dying, not yet at least. But yes, although that it's true that death or impermanence, it's one of the things I worry most about life. And perhaps it's because I don't trust. I saw completely in a different way. The death reveal an awareness. Something you said, it looked, I got it, or got a glimpse. There's a probability I will lose it. But yeah, thank you.
Hmm.
And I don't know what else I had said.
I think what it was I'm glad to hear that you say something happened to you. I think what it was that I heard a story that about a Western practitioner who went to Japan mm-hmm. and in a Japanese Zen monastery. And after a while, his visa expired. And so the abbot of the monastery took him to the passport office to get his visa renewed. And the guy at the desk said, so how long does he need his visa for, to the abbot? And Freddie's laughing. Did I already tell you the story, Freddie? No. And so the guy asks him how long does he need the visa for? And the abbot said, he needs his visa until he solves the great matter of life and death, which probably in the context of Japan had some kind of meaning for the guy behind the desk, but probably not too, you know. But wow, that's serious. The abbot brings it even into the passport office, that's the point, you know, solving the great matter of life and death. That's what this is all about. Mysterious, what does it mean? You know, it's a mystery. What do we mean by that? And yet we chant it every night, you know, life and death are of supreme importance. And when you say you're preoccupied with life, that's as it should be. You know, let's live this life now fully. Instead of spending our time trying not to get old and sick and die, you know? It's like, There is this feeling sometimes when someone dies, and it's like all of a sudden it all seems like it went really quickly. And there's this thing of, wow, all of that for this, you know? And I often think of that when you know, I'm a sports fan. And in football, they have this thing that they call free kick. So people who, any of you who know about football, they have a free kick near the goal. And so they do this whole elaborate thing where the players stand up and form a wall. And the guardian goalkeeper is like telling them where to go and looking like this. And then what now, even there's this new thing where one of the players lies down behind the other player's legs so that if the players jump up to block the ball, and the ball is kicked under them, the player will block it. It's this whole elaborate thing, and it takes forever to get all in place. And probably 99% of the time, the ball goes flying over, like into the stands, you know? And I always, my reaction is always, in French, tout ça pour ça, you know, all of that for that. And life is kind of like that, you know. We make such a big deal about some things when actually, trust, relax, you know, just live it. Probably if those football players, they weren't making such a big deal about it all, they would probably score much more often, you know, if they didn't put the wall there, for example, you know, or if the goalie just relaxed or something, or if the guy kicking it would just relax, you know. So that's a call to live fully, you know. Wake up in the heart of your life, not on your deathbed. Well, actually, we are on our deathbed as we speak, but it's a big bed at the moment for most of us. So. So, yeah. Enjoy your life. Enjoy summer. And we'll see you, some of you in Portugal, in a month. Whoever comes to the study group, we'll see you on Saturday. And Tuesday night will be our last sitting, but there will not be Dharma talk. So, thank you. I guess we'll say the vows for our final Thursday night.